This public radio podcast is supported by the Society for Human Resource Management, meeting the challenges of a changing world, online at shrm.org, and by KeyBank Capital Markets, specializing in corporate and investment banking solutions for established and growing mid-sized companies. Visit key.com/kbcm.org.
Registering China's disaster.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Renita Jablonski. As you're hearing this morning, the death toll is going up in China after a strong earthquake. Toyota says it still has no word on its small joint venture facility in Sichuan Province, the epicenter of the quake. Staff at a Ford Motor facility were evacuated, but there was no serious damage and workers were back to work in about 10 minutes. Marketplace's Scott Tong joins us now from Shanghai. Scott, you've been to this region of the country. How would you describe it?
To give you a little perspective, the per capita income nationally is about $2,000 US. And in the province of Sichuan, it's about $1,300. So it's a quite poor part of China, quite rural. It's a part of China that takes a lot of people from the countryside and it sends the migrants out to the factories, to the coastal cities to find jobs. So it's the equivalent of someone in the middle of the United States sending parents out to the East Coast for jobs.
Of course, as the day goes on, we're going to be hearing more about just how severe the injuries, casualties were out of this. Mm-hmm. What about in Shanghai, where you are? Did you feel anything there or any reports there?
We work in about a 30-floor high-rise building in Shanghai's downtown, and we actually didn't feel anything. But just a few blocks away in many office buildings, we heard from friends that they felt tremors, they're a little bit dizzy right now, and they all had to evacuate their office buildings. One of the tallest buildings in the world is right across the river from us. It's called the Jingmao Tower, and they had forced evacuations of that building. So there's been a lot of people who basically knocked off for the rest of the day here in Shanghai, up in Beijing.
All right, our Scott Tong in Shanghai. Glad to hear you're safe. Thanks a lot.
Okay, Renita.
Switching gears, Newsday will be in its own headlines. Cablevision picked up the Long Island paper for $650 million after Rupert Murdoch's News Corp decided not to go after it. Sprint Nextel dialed in a larger deficit for the first quarter. Revenue fell as the company lost more than a million subscribers. The Dow dropped nearly 121 points Friday to 12,745. The Nasdaq lost 5 points to close at 2,445. The S&P 500 fell 9 to 1,388. European shares are edging higher and Asian markets were up today. It's Upfront Week in New York. That's when the networks unveil their new shows for advertisers who then prepay for commercial time. Last year, they spent around $9.5 billion. Stacey Vanek-Smith reports on what this year's market may bring.
Network TV audiences have been shrinking for years, but ad prices keep going up.
The networks get rewarded for failure.
Horizon Media's Brad Adgate says TV has gotten away with this because it's traditionally been the only way to reach a really big and broad national audience. But Adgate says advertisers are getting tired of paying more for less.
To get the same viewers you got the year before, you have to buy more commercial time. Now more than ever, marketers have other platforms in which to spend their dollars.
Namely online, where advertising and audiences are growing. But Hal Vogel of Vogel Capital Management says primetime ads are still the best way to grab a lot of eyeballs.
Otherwise, you have to go and buy 12 different cable networks and shop around for the best websites, in a sense, picking up small crumbs to make a big pie.
Vogel predicts ad prices will be up around 5% over last year. I'm Stacey Vanek-Smith for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by The Economist, committed to writing about issues that matter and the connections between them. The Economist. See the world differently. At newsstands and economist.com. And by the Medtronic Foundation, partnering with patient groups, first responders, and physicians to save lives lost from sudden cardiac arrest. On the web at medtronic.com. The Marketplace Entrepreneurship Desk is supported by the Kauffman Foundation of Kansas City, the foundation of entrepreneurship. Online at kauffman.org.
The Federal Trade Commission received more than 220,000 complaints about web-related fraud last year. With all the focus on internet spam, we may be forgetting about the good old-fashioned hard copy junk. Sally Herships reports.
I recently got spammed. It was the usual thing about a distant relative who died, leaving me millions. What was unusual was it showed up in my mailbox, the real one. I wondered, are consumers getting better at detecting email scams? Are criminals turning back to traditional mail? How can regular mail spam possibly be cost-effective? I decided to go straight to the source. I called my spammer.
Hi, is this Mr. Rosso?
Problem was, once I told him I was a journalist, he didn't want anything to do with me.
Hello? Hello?
So I decided to talk to Sally Greenberg, executive director of the National Consumers League. She says certain crimes like fake check schemes are on the rise. In fact, she just received a bad check for $17,000.
It looks legitimate. There is nothing counterfeit looking about it, and it's drawn on a regular bank, and it came overnight mail. It's the kind of thing that has the markers of legitimacy and very, very tempting to put in the bank.
The scam works like this. You receive a fake check. Your bank cashes it, and the scammer then asks you to cover taxes or fees. By the time your bank finds out the check is no good, the criminal is long gone. Greenberg says the average loss from scams like these is $3,000, certainly enough to keep spammers in paper and envelopes. Jim Van Dyke is the founder of Javelin Strategy and Research. He says people need to remember old rules, even when they switch to new technologies.
They're being more vigilant about the electronic channels, and they're not paying attention as much to the old-fashioned ones.
In other words, people tend to pay more attention to what comes through their email than through their mailbox.
People often assume that criminals have some sort of a bias toward new technology. Like criminals think new technology is cool and fun. But what we see is that criminals have no bias at all.
What they really want are your personal details, and they'll do whatever it takes to get them. But Van Dyke says most people lose their identity when they lose their personal effects. So if you want to play it safe, leave your checkbook at home. I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
You can still send us some internet mail at marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Renita Jablonski.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.